We're going to continue the hour now by talking about an event that's coming up this weekend, Saturday, November 5th at 9 a.m. Carolina Public Humanities out of UNC is going to be doing an event called Authoritarianism and Autocracies in Modern Europe. Two historians, Donald Rawley and Lloyd Kramer, are going to be speaking on the rise of authoritarianism in different European countries at different times in history, the rise of fascism in the 20th century, and then the rise of Vladimir Putin in modern-day Russia, and there will be a discussion about it. You can get more information and reserve your spot online at humanities.unc.edu, which is Carolina Public Humanities website. Joined here in the studio to talk about it by Lloyd Kramer, UNC history professor, and also the director of Carolina Public Humanities, one of the two speakers on Saturday. Dr. Kramer, pleasure as always. How are you?
Well, thank you, Aaron. A pleasure to be here.
So that was the 15-second summary. Tell me about the event and the impetus behind it.
Okay, well, we're planning to do a discussion of why authoritarianism became popular in Europe in the 20th century, and then how it has had a kind of resurgence, especially in Russia and in parts of Eastern Europe in the 21st century. And our goal is to look at this as a historical issue to help our community better understand why authoritarian movements gain popularity. And I think the theme I particularly want to stress is that in times when people feel a great resentment and fear, they become particularly drawn to, let's say, strongman-type leaders who claim that they can solve the problems and take away the issues that people fear.
Yeah.
And to take the example of both Italy and Germany after World War I, there was a great deal of resentment, especially in Germany, that the Germans had not won the war or been recognized for their military efforts. And there were a lot of people who felt that Germany's power and glory had been diminished. So there was resentment about international issues. But this converged very dangerously with anger and fear about economic issues, particularly inflation in the 1920s, and then the Great Depression that hit in after 1929. Hmm. So resentment about a sense that people are being displaced or not recognized or feeling that they've lost some greatness they once had. And then merged with that anxiety about economics. And that definitely inflation had played a big role in Germany.
Where, this is going to be an odd question, but I think you'll understand, where does resentment and fear come from? Does it come organically from people responding to just like circumstances on the ground, or are elites at play here?
I think both. I think people fear changes and uncertainties in their mm-hmm. lives. There's a kind of psychological desire in most human beings to have some stability and security. And when there are great upheavals, as in the aftermath, during and after wars or in economic times, people feel resentment. And so this sort of inchoate anger or fear or resentment is then mobilized by skillful propagandists, political demagogues, and certainly people like Mussolini and Hitler were masters at this, mm-hmm. and claiming that it's not your fault that these things are happening to you. It's because of others, international forces that were unfair to you. And then there's always a scapegoating mechanism because the fear of other countries, other people, other races, of course, rampant anti-Semitism as it developed in the Nazi movement. So people give this fear an object against which it can be directed. And this happens again and again in human history. And it certainly was at the basis of authoritarianism in 20th century Europe.
Speaking with Lloyd Kramer again, going to be speaking Saturday, November 5th, in a Carolina Public Humanities event called Authoritarianism and Autocracies in Modern Europe. So we're talking about times when there has been a lot of change, transformation, economic uncertainty, economic depression. You mentioned inflation, and people respond to that with authoritarianism. There have also been lots of times in history where all of those things have happened and societies haven't fallen into authoritarianism. What constitutes the difference there, do you think?
Well, I think it's important when people feel vulnerable that they have a sense that the government and public officials are serving their interests. Mm-hmm. So just to take the counterexample of the United States in the 1930s, we had Roosevelt and the development of the New Deal, which of course some people criticize as government overreach, but it certainly was nothing like the authoritarianism that was emerging in Europe. So one of the main claims that authoritarians make is that democratic governments are inefficient, ineffectual, unable to solve problems. And so if there is going to be a resistance against that kind of idea, the people who lead democratic societies need to make sure that their institutions are functioning effectively. They're willing to do the difficult work that democracy requires. Mm-hmm. That might mean making compromises that you don't really want to make. It certainly means accepting majority rule or the outcome of elections. It means recognizing that democratic traditions are a viable way to solve social and political problems. And so when that attitude is sustained, then authoritarianism is less successful. Mm-hmm. But one of the great abilities of authoritarian movements is to gum up the system to make democracy, in effect, unable to function mm-hmm. by obstructing things, by blocking any kind of constructive action, by making any kind of compromise. And when that happens, then the authoritarian leader says, see, the system doesn't work. I am the solution to your problems, and I will make our country work again. I'll make the trains run on time, as Mussolini famously mm-hmm. said, and I will get rid of these groups who are so dangerous. And of course, the other thing in Europe, this coincided with the aftermath of the Russian Revolution, and there was a tremendous mobilization of fear of socialists and communists.
Imagine people listening, and I'm sure that the way you're describing it, kind of consciously drawing parallels between the early 20th century in Europe and what we're seeing in the United States today. What are the parallels? What are the differences that you think are most important?
Well, I think, for one thing, the United States does have a more robust democratic tradition than mm-hmm. either Germany or Italy had in the early 20th century. They were relatively new democratic societies. I think we still are able to sustain a more independent press, although who knows what Hitler and Mussolini would have done if they had social media or they could manipulate the news. The parallel I see is the constant reiteration of lies. I think one of the great dangers of our own democracy now is the constant bombardment of the population, particularly the right-wing population, with systematic lies. And this, the big lie, was at the heart of authoritarian and fascist movements in Europe. The other thing is the sort of the cult of the leader and the idea that there is one person who has a kind of mystical power almost over his followers, and these great rallies that these authoritarian parties had, which give the sense of a massive movement of support. This is now amplified with modern media and television, and so in that sense there are parallels. We also have an increasing number of militias and armed groups that suggest parallels, but so far we have not seen the same kind of systematic militia action that we saw in the lead
right.
up to fascism.
You mentioned social media, and I've always been curious about just the extent to which it's really easy to amplify something on social media, because you got 1 billion people on Twitter, but it only takes 1,000 people tweeting about something for it to start trending and for people to start noticing that and talking about it and for that to be reported in the news. But 1,000 out of 1 billion is a fraction of a percentage, but that still looks like a movement, even though it's not.
That's right. When you think about how democracy emerged in the 18th century, there was this idea that you would have a relatively small group of well-informed people debating rationally about public issues. Of course, that never exactly happened, but that was the idea. And in the current context, the notion of sustained rational debate about public issues is totally passé, in that The goal is to create the most immediate and transient bang for your buck, so to speak. And in that sense, I think social media has given authoritarian movements even more potential than they may have had it in earlier periods.
I never really did get to the, I guess the ideal is like the town hall meeting where everyone comes together and has that rational discussion as opposed to just a very small percentage of elite people up on top. And we haven't quite gotten there yet in general either, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Some people thought that new media and the internet would actually make it possible to have participation in new ways. And in that sense, in some ways, people are more engaged.
I was going to say they were right about that.
But, but the problem with the internet is just the unbelievable potential for spreading lies, which even the Nazis, who had great radio stations, could not match.
Speaking with Lloyd Kramer, the event that we're talking about is Saturday, 9 a.m., Authoritarianism and Autocracies in Modern Europe. Donald Raleigh, history professor emeritus, is also going to be speaking there, talking about modern Russia, right?
That's correct. And I think that what is important to remember in all these situations is that these authoritarian movements always argue that they are going to restore something that has been lost, a kind of mythical past, the great German tradition or in the Roman Empire.
Usually something that never existed.
Something
in the first
that never
place,
existed,
right.
But is mythologized. And yet they are, in fact, extremely revolutionary, and they are in no way restoring something that has been lost. They are usually destroying something that has been developed. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, they are revolutionary movements, not conservative movements.
Any other thing that folks should know about this event on Saturday?
So our goal at this event is to use history to gain perspectives on how difficult but also how important it is to protect and sustain democracy.
Humanities.unc.edu is the website for Carolina Public Humanities. They've got a lot of events scheduled throughout the rest of the semester and on into next year, including this one on Saturday, 9 a.m., Authoritarianism and Autocracies in Modern Europe. Go to the website, and you can register and reserve your spot. Professor Lloyd Kramer, thank you, as always, for being here.
Thank you very much, Aaron. It's a pleasure to talk with you.